You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to Freethinker Radio. My name is Derek Rose. I'm here with Micah Jackson. What's up, Micah?
Oh, another week full of news and exciting emotional events. We'll see how it's cool to be here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. If you're just tuning in, make sure you got your stations preset to that so you can discover a whole bunch of music, a whole bunch of different ideas being espoused by Houston's, I guess, one of Houston's premier non-corporate radio stations. I think there are some other college stations, right? But KPFT's been doing it for over 50 years, and as that intro said, we've been doing this show for over 10 years, and we're thankful for all the support we've had and the opportunities we've had, and it's mostly all because of y'all. So, you know, KPFT, thank you for having us, and we look to explore a lot of topics in the next hour as well as play music. I guess, what do you want to get into? I know we got some local, but don't know if you want to.
I just want to plug real quick while we're mentioning KPFT, also plug our website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com, for anybody who is new to our show and wants to catch up on the archives. Every week we do post the archives of the show. You can listen to the replays, the audio or the video version. And then, of course, every single one of the stories that Micah and I cover every week can be found at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. So if you're listening to this on 90.1 KPFT in Houston, or you're listening to this on Odyssey or Rockfin or Facebook or wherever else, and you're curious about the stories, once the show ends, go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And we can get you caught up there. And I do want to mention, I don't want to dive into it just yet, but I will say, if you continue with listening to the show in just a bit, we're going to cover one of the important stories is this so-called pandemic treaty. And I just want to take a moment to say, you know, if you've been following Freethinker Radio and listening to us every week, whether on the internet or on KPFT, you heard about this pandemic treaty back in December. We're going to get more into that in just a little bit. But just want to say that, you know, sometimes even here on Freethinker Radio, we're doing a podcast and a radio show. But even though we're in the, you know, quote unquote, independent alternative media, sometimes we're breaking stories that even the rest of the independent media is not talking about yet. And here we are in March, mid-March, and now they're starting to talk about a story that we covered on Freethinker Radio back in December. So I just wanted to make that note. So tune in and you'll be ahead of the rest of the crowd.
Yeah, that's good point. Good point, Derek. I do want to mention a couple of shows that are coming up because they are going on. Life's going on despite all the craziness, and it's good to get out and enjoy it. Reagan Era Rejects are playing Sunday at Trip 6. And I saw also that there's a show going on at Dan Electro's with the Guillotine and 61 Ghosts, and that's going on Saturday. So those two music events to get out to. And I know the Epicurean Market at 1245 Heights will be going on Saturday morning. So if you're an early riser and want to go explore the world, now there's something to get into. So yeah.
Very cool. I miss the Heights Epicurean Market, man. I can't wait to be back in Houston to check out one when I'm in town.
No doubt. We look forward to seeing you. I'm going to be there myself this weekend. I'm pretty excited about it. It's always a good time and get to explore things that are being actually made by people there and healthy foods and such as that. I don't know. You know, the local news, there's so much going on. And in a way, it seems like I'm just so tired of some of these stories. You know, it's getting to the point I just get tired of them. But it turns out that there's another elementary school teacher that's charged with assault. One of the reasons I'm bringing this up is, where do most people begin to interact with, you know, people that are just put in authority over them? Typically in school, you know, state-run school, told to go to public school, your parents get in trouble, right? It turns out that this elementary school teacher, that's right, elementary, somebody's baby, got sent to state school, and this is what happened, has been arrested after allegations arose that he inappropriately touched a student at Ashford Elementary multiple times. This man, who's 39 years old, was charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child under 14 years of age. And this would happen when the other kids were on recess, basically. The victim stated in her forensic interview that she was to stay inside the classroom. So, yeah, that's a horrible, horrible, horrible experience. I don't know what can be done in the face of this. You know, it's without little effort that within just, I guess, the HISD, the ISDs around Houston, that these type of stories and worse are pretty much common I don't know that they, do you think they've always been common, Derek? I mean, what do you think this is? Is this some kind of phenomenon? What can be done? I think it's horrible, because if this is how easy it is to have these stories, just like episode after episode, you've heard them. What can be done? What do you think can be done? And in another article, when they were talking about the 5-year plan for HISD and not to have these huge lofty goals, they're talking about 250,000 students just in HISD alone. That's not counting, you know, Aldine. That's not counting A-Leaf. That's not counting all these little ISDs that surround. And, you know, you probably got 500,000 kids in these, what would you call them, indoctrination camps? And these are just some of the more explicit victims, right? This is some of the more horrendous stuff. We know all the other stuff it does. I mean, I'm glad that people can homeschool. I think that's one solution, but I don't know. I just, like I said, I'm getting tired of these. We went to them because it was a place where a lot of horrible things were happening that weren't being spoken about. And it is an intersection between, you know, an individual's life, their freedom, and the state, more or less. Because this teacher was an arm of the state, whether you want to realize it or not.
Yeah, I think that, Micah, you know, this is one of the areas that, for those who've listened to Freethinker Radio for a number of years, you know that, as you said, Micah, this is one of the topics we've covered back and forth, and not always a fun one to get into, but a real topic, something that is really happening. Maybe people listening to this are like, okay, well, what does, you know, something going on with an elementary school teacher in the city of Houston have to do with me, wherever I live? But I think that the point is that we consistently find these stories in the city of Houston, and I don't think Houston's unique in this. Unfortunately, you know, attacks on children, which I think is what this is, and hurting children, whether through physical assault, sexual assault, it is common in the sense that you can constantly pull up stories from elementary schools, junior highs. Then we can get into, not, you know, beyond the school environment. We're talking about politicians, and we're talking about, we've covered Second Baptist. We've covered more, Jehovah's Witnesses, the Catholic Church. I mean, these sorts of things happen in so many different areas. And yeah, it's not really like it's, oh yes, yeah, another story we're looking forward to covering this week. It's just, I think at the least does deserve to be mentioned and to be discussed, because this poor young girl, I think it said was a young woman, had to go through this and had to live that, you know, and all we're doing is just talking about it. Maybe it makes some people uncomfortable to acknowledge these things or to talk about that. But really, I think that probably the children aren't very comfortable going, you know, having to live it, first of all. And the parents, you know, they now have to make decisions about what they want to do with their kids in the future. Like you said, not every parent can or wants to homeschool. Maybe that's not an option, right? So if your only option is keeping your kids in the public schooling system, this is something that, you know, you're going to want to think about. This is something that you have to, I guess, kind of contend with every time you send your kids off to elementary school. And that's not to say, of course, every teacher in elementary school or any school system is doing these sort of things. But it does, at least, I think, as a parent, deserve your attention and kind of, yeah, I don't know, man. These things are disturbing, and it's disturbing that it's so common.
Indubitably, definitely. I think you hit the main thing is to, you know, talk with your kids, have some sort of communication with your children about this, because no matter where they are, and I don't know exactly how one goes about this. I guess there's probably experts to talk to you about it. But no matter where they go, it sounds like, you know, you went down the list that stepped well outside the ISDs. There's this position of authority, you know, be it ecclesiastical or political or, you know, just the common school down the street. So, you know, I think if nothing else, it talks to the rampant abuse of power that, you know, that people in these positions sometimes feel entitled to take. So, yeah, we've had some really horrible ones. So if your kid suggests anything, I would suggest listening to your kid. Maybe that's the best thing to say also, you know. Maybe there's not a way to
kids. Listen to the kids, for sure.
Yeah, well, no doubt.
Let's go ahead and get into it. More to get into here on Freethinker Radio. As always, guys, we start with some Houston and Texas news. We start to branch out, get into national news. Today, we will be talking about the now apparently ever-present topic of Ukraine. We do have some COVID updates, although you might have thought that COVID was over because all of a sudden the media narrative just jumped ship and you're not hearing about it so much anymore. There are still some relevant pieces of information related to COVID-19 that are worth knowing. But before we do that, we're going to continue our look at Texas news. All right, I got this story pulled up, Micah. Governor Abbott, what's this all about? Fentanyl? You're muted.
Basically, the headline is more or less the story. People that are pressing pills and selling these pressed pills that contain fentanyl may be held basically responsible for murder. It speaks to the volume of the opioid crisis and fentanyl, which we both are well aware of its impact in the Houston area and beyond, Derek. So I think it's an interesting move. I don't know what to say about it. You know, obviously, if you're selling a product that's killing someone, you probably ought to be somehow accountable for that.
And so what it's specifically saying, people who can be prosecuted more harshly if they give non-prescription fentanyl to another person. So this is like dealing with a very specific aspect of how people get access to fentanyl. Because like you said, Micah, there's shady, unfortunate, just immoral, unethical things like drug dealers lacing their drugs with fentanyl, and then people who do have overdoses because they didn't realize they were taking something much stronger than they were expecting. But then there's also the issue of people being prescribed hard opiates like fentanyl. And is that what this is specifically addressing? You're muted.
Mostly it's the ones that were not prescribed, you know, just the black market manufactured drugs, more or less. So, you know, it's a stand that I imagine might be concerning some people, but I doubt that the people that are doing this are too concerned. It seems like they have to know how dangerous their product is. I mean, you know, you're not talking about a joint somebody sold you in, you know, the park. You're talking about a pill that you can use once and it could kill you. So I'm not sure the best way to deal with it, but obviously it's because the concern the governor is now trying to say something, you know, about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody here at this show is not really the first one to say, let's get the government involved. But again, we do have each of us, both of us plus Johnny, who's not here tonight, have personal stories, people we know who've been affected by fentanyl. And I just want to read this one line here. It says that Abbott said, while people may overdose and die after repeatedly taking opioids, that's not the case, always the case with fentanyl. Quote, they're taking a drug, a pill for the first time, and it'll kill them. This is not a fentanyl overdose. This is poisoning by fentanyl, which we want to make a murder crime in the state of Texas. And then it goes on to say pressed pills can be laced with fentanyl, and people might not realize they're ingesting the substance. This was the case for a family in Cedar Park, as well as a Texas Longhorn linebacker last year, who I'm guessing thought he was going to party off one thing and then ended up taking something laced with fentanyl, and it cost him his life. So definitely very real circumstances people are facing. And yeah, I mean, maybe we could just kind of get into that a little deeper just for at least a moment. Like what other avenues to approaching these kind of problems? We talked a little bit about some of this in the past, like as far as, what is it like drug prevention programs, right? Or maybe even drug test kits and things like that to harm reduction, things like that, you know. But what other tactics or ideas? I'm asking you, Mike, as well as anybody who's listening who wants to throw some comments out and, you know, tell us what you're thinking.
I think being aware, you know, like we were saying with COVID, that something's going around, being aware that these products are out there in growing and growing numbers would make you want to consider the source of wherever you're getting whatever you're getting from. I mean, if you don't know that person from Adam, you might not trust it, you know. I mean, I think that, you know, maybe some alternatives in other ways might be, you know, as we've talked about, you know, legalization. That way, you know, the market itself could regulate quantity, but, you know, you're still going to have, or quality, you can still have, you know, you're still going to have these people that are able to just, you know, generate this stuff at such cheap overhead and manufacture so many of these pills that it's, you know, kind of a moot point, because they're going to step past the market faster than it can. They're not building long-term relationships with their clients. So you're hitting the manufacturer other than just like shutting them down somehow. I don't know that the economic hit that the market would put, say someone sold bad beer, people wouldn't drink bad beer, you know, at least not people that could afford better beer. So I think that theory would apply to things like, you know, weed and et cetera. But this we're talking about, as the governor himself said, you could take once and die. And I think, you know, we have seen examples of that, as that said, the linebacker and the Cedar Park family, not to mention the others. So I think the best thing people can do in this phase is different than the usual one that I would say. And I think you hit it, was test kits. And I think that goes on to consider the source. I mean, also, I don't think that pills should be, you know, your go-to. You know, if you can't get a prescription for it, you might want to wonder why. I mean, I'm not saying to just trust all the doctors in the world, but there's probably a reason that these pills aren't just readily accessible to you. If you have to go through a lot of effort to get it from someone you don't even know, you could be gambling with yours or a loved one's life if you plan to share that. You know, that's another thing. If you're in the culture that's doing this, you might want to consider that for whatever rush you think you're going to get, you could be endangering your or a loved one's life.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to just mention a couple of points here because we did get some comments come in. I will say I don't necessarily agree with the direction one of them is going, but Narcan kits. This is what you were just saying. Like, you know, we're talking about Narcan is a way to help people who are, you know, having overdoses, but also drug testing kits. We talked about that because, you know, some people don't want to hear this, but the reality is people will use drugs, and shaming them, as some people are suggesting, are not going to, it's not going to work for everybody at least, right? Maybe that'll work for a certain portion of the population, but shaming people or thinking that you're going to lock them up. We've already seen the results of the horrific drug war. And as you said, Micah, legalization, decriminalization, those things could also have an effect. Like we saw what Portugal's had decriminalized all drugs back in 2005, I think. So over 15 years of evidence now. No, the cases didn't go up. No, there's not drug addicts in the street. Kids aren't on drugs. In fact, now people who need help pursue help more often. I mean, there's some really great research over there. We have another person who said more campaigns, more exposure to friendly information. I think that's good. But then they also added more demonization of the pill. And again, maybe that'll work if you tell people how bad it is. But ultimately, I don't really think that's, I think like acknowledging that people will pursue this, whether we agree with it or not, then and figuring out how to help them is best. Another comment, invest in drug treatment, make it less shameful. That's what I think. Because if you try to shame people, people go hide in the dark back alleys and places where when they really need help, they feel like they can't get help because you've made it such a shameful thing. People are afraid to come say, hey, can I just get help? And that's one of the things that Portugal did is when people get arrested or caught with drugs, let's say, not necessarily arrested, but say you get caught with drugs, you have this option to go see a health professional. And if you want to get help for, if you have deeper issues, then you can have that. If not, they just let you go. You know, you're free to go. They're just okay giving you the opportunity. And people increasingly take the help when it's available, when they know that they're not going to just be thrown in a cage. If, you know, because who shows up at the prison or at the jailhouse and says, help me, I need help. Like I'm a drug addict, you know, please help me. No, they're going to throw you in jail. Right. So people don't feel like the resources are even there. And then this is other comment brings up, I think, an important issue, again, even though I don't really agree with the way they seem to be pushing it, but they asked, isn't most of it coming across the border? I don't know if that's a fact, but I know a lot of conservatives and right-leaning folk tend to kind of play up that talking point. I don't know if it's 100% true. And then they follow this up with, how about we fix the border? So it kind of makes me doubt maybe whatever their goals are here. But I do know that fentanyl and crystal meth and other drugs are produced in parts of Mexico, but also in the United States as well, because these are things that you can make. But what we have read is that they are sometimes shipped through the black market from China, certain components of making fentanyl, to Mexico, and then funneled up into the United States as well. So I think there is some elements of truth to that, but I don't know if it's as easy as saying close the border or fix the border and that's going to stop all drug use or something like that, because fentanyl is one aspect, but we've also covered in the past how you also have the huge pharmaceutical opioid component, you know, like the Sackler family and all these other people and the doctors who've been going to prison, thankfully now because of giving away drugs to people. But yeah, so sorry that was a little long-winded, Micah, but I'm glad we got some comments here.
One thing I would say real quick is I just did a quick search and a couple of sources said that China was the main source of fentanyl arriving in the United States. So that'd be an interesting wall, you know, maybe with Canada or something. I don't know. I'm confused, but you get the point. Yeah, it's not like you said, Derek, it's not just from Mexico. Fentanyl's being made wherever they can make that cheap enough to move it in a pill that might kill you.
Absolutely. And then one last comment, we got somebody reminds us that the government has a history of bringing drugs in, or at least allowing them for different purposes. We can look back to the freeway, Rick Ross, and his stories in the 80s about CIA bringing in crack into inner city youth. But let's go ahead and jump forward. We're about 20 minutes in and it's almost time for a music break. But let's get to another story, Micah, because this one is, it's not the biggest news story of the day, of course, but it's worth remembering because these kinds of things happen. And I feel like there's no accountability. In this case, there's some accountability. But what about all the people who, when this particular actor came out and said that he had been accosted and the victim of a hate crime, the people who were like, see, this proves we have a white supremacy problem and there's racists taking over America and that whole narrative that a lot of people want to believe, not to say racism doesn't exist, obviously. What I'm talking about, of course, is actor Jussie Smollett, who, as I said, was caught faking a hate crime, paying two Nigerian men to pretend to try to, you know, hang him or bring a noose to him. So tell us, what's the latest on this, Micah?
Yeah, it turns out that he's saying, you know, that he's still innocent. He was sentenced to 30 months of probation and must spend the first 150 days of the sentence in the Cook County Jail. And they said he had to stay in the jail because he basically lied to try to, you know, mislead a jury. And as he got led out of the courtroom, he screams back, if anything happens to me when I go in there, I did not do it to myself. I am not suicidal, he yelled as he was led from the court, raising a fist in the air. So, yeah, they said that, you know, he his serious criminal misconduct and was basically the reason he was arrested. Mr. Smollett made the choice that he could deceive a jury, and he went to the stand and lied to them about so many different things. And it was a ridiculous story. And this is what the prosecutor said. Webb also said that in the 3 years since the attack, Smollett has never apologized for the impact his crime had on the city or the victims of real hate crimes who have trouble getting the police to believe them. In addition to a prison term, Webb asked the judge to order Smollett to pay $130,000 to the city to cover the police overtime it took to investigate his false claims and to serve significant amount of time doing community service. It's, I don't know, it's a bit much to get up on a stand and try to convince a jury of a fake crime, you know. He's going to have probation and do time in the jail and maybe have to pay the city back for the cost. Think it has been long enough that this has faded from a lot of people's minds. They're like, what was this? You know, they forget that he was on Empire and, you know.
Exactly. And I think that, raising a fist and like, what, I mean, he still is acting like he's like some kind of activist making a stance or something when this dude just got, you know, caught straight up lying. And as you said, really damaging for people. You know, we've had this argument, maybe we don't even really believe in the term hate crime in the first place, right? We think that's kind of, there's some discussion to be had around that. But the point is, if people out there go to report, let's say a race motivated crime, they might have difficulty getting cops to believe them. Whereas this celebrity runs to the cops and says, oh my God, I was a victim. These guys attacked me. They were white men in Trump hats. That's what he said. And they had a noose and blah, blah, whatever. And the whole thing's faked and he paid for it. And is he still working? I mean, he probably still has a job. I'm sure he's still.
His family is completely behind him, saying things like he's a justice warrior. And, you know, seeing the trial was gut wrenching and stomach turning. These sort of things. It turns out he's got a lot of support letters from individuals such as Reverend Jesse Jackson, Alfred Woodard, Samuel L. Jackson.
Surprise.
You know, all spoke highly Samuel of this Jackson. Character. Yep. And called on the judge to avoid a prison sentence. On the bench, the judge scowled and shook his head during the reading of some of the letters, at one point putting his head in his hand and frowning. The hearing began with about an hour and a half of arguments on the request for a new trial, which was ultimately denied. And they basically said, we've been talked about this for 2 years. I do believe in the end of the day, Mr. Smollett received a fair trial. So, you know, I guess that's how it is. You know, you eventually have to do something. Otherwise, nothing happens. So, it goes into the history of the story a bit more than we had time to. And as you said before, I think all these stories are linked up on our website, HoustonFreethinkers.com. So if you just hearing about it and want to get more into what happened, it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, we're going to take a quick music break. We're going to come back. We're going to continue the conversation, get into some of this Russia-related news, talk about our old friend Bill Gates, a little bit of COVID news. And again, I'm going to show you a clip, if we can get it to work, to prove to you that you should be tuning into Freethinker Radio every Friday on 90.1 KPFT Houston or whatever we air every week on the internet, and making sure you're ahead of the game, because we were talking about some stories. Not the first time this has happened either. I just want to take a moment when we get back to talk about that. But in the meantime, we're going to play a song called Programmed by hip-hop artist Hi-Rez. Check him out if you haven't. He's growing in popularity, and we think you might enjoy this. So stay tuned. This is Freethinker Radio. We'll be right back.
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, cop the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, cop the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program.
They want us brainwashed till we have the same thoughts, say the wrong thing and they'll put us in the same box. One world, one currency and no God. I won't let them piss on me and tell me that it's raindrops. Lies, where they selling at? Truth, they don't tell us that. I don't care if you a Republican or a Democrat, ain't hearing what you telling me. We are not the enemy, they pushing their narrative through these Hollywood celebrities. We living in a matrix, every day the same shit. You don't like the history, you just try to erase it. You don't like something to somebody, you replace it. Everything is sexist, everything is racist, every claim is baseless, everything is tainted. I love my life, but the American dream is so tasteless. Time that we face it, I don't fear no man. Why you think they've been calling these TV shows programs?
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, keep the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, cop the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program.
Capitalism got us trapped in a prison, killing people over Jordans while they laughing and chilling. The liquor store and fast food got you in a bad mood, or our lives politicized, don't really value criminals, lack of citizens, killing all the witnesses. What type of bullshit is this? The world that we living in. There's an app to find love, there's an app to buy drugs, there's no app to find us. While they're spraying our crops, they want you hating the cops, they want you hating your moms, they want you hating your pops. Want us hating each other, that's how they divide and conquer. Sell your soul if you want an easy way to the top. I've been praying to God, I know we're hearing the call. They just play on your emotions, got you feeling it all. It's love over here, not that fake stuff neither. I'll deprogram myself, I don't need you.
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, cop the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules, lead the fools, cop the shoes, every day cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who, everything that we do, we program.
You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
All right, welcome back to Freethinker Radio. That was Hi-Rez Programmed, and I hope you enjoyed that one.
I did. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, you got it. You like it?
Yep.
Sounds check good. Him out. He's all over the place. He's going viral, actually. He's been doing bigger and bigger. I mean, I'm not a fan of every single one of his songs, but he definitely is talented and, you know, something outside of the mainstream. But it seems like it's becoming increasingly popular.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So should we dive into Russia, Micah?
Yeah, dive into Russia.
I mean, I feel like we didn't talk about it at all last week, and maybe it was just for me. I would say, like, I don't, and I think this is maybe also an unofficial policy on our show that we've all just sort of gravitated towards it. We don't necessarily just do a story because everybody else is talking about it, because the mainstream wants us to be talking about it, because those things tend to be fads. You know, they kind of come and go, don't always necessarily end up being stories that really last for a while or end up being important in the long term. I don't think that's the case with this one. I do think we're dealing with some silly stuff happening, but yeah, we didn't even talk about it at all last week. So we got quite a few stories. I know you've got a few. Let's go ahead and start with.
As you said, everybody was talking about it. They're not talking about a lot of other things that are going on. One of the articles that hopefully we have time for kind of brings up and addresses that very point. So I'm kind of glad that you're mentioning it, because yeah, it was like a complete gear shift, right? If you're just watching the mainstream media, it was like, COVID, boom, Russian invasion.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it dropped off. Well, let's go ahead. Let's get into it. Let's start with, and then we're definitely going to talk about the push towards a central bank digital currency in the U.S. So much to cover here in the last 20 minutes. So, guys, stay tuned with us. We'll have maybe another song, another break here in just a bit, and we're going to play another clip from Freethinker Radio. But let's jump into this, the Texas connection here. The Missouri connection. I thought it was Bush over here in Texas. We got Representative Cori Bush explains her vote against Russian oil ban. What's this about, Micah? Is this somebody's not playing along?
Turns out, you know, you wouldn't know it given all the you know, cheerleading and everything we see, but 17 of our representatives voted against the bill to ban the Russian oil. Not just Cori Bush, but Cori Bush, and she is a first-term a representative from Missouri. And on Thursday, she explained that her reasoning for voting against it is that it basically failed to address the underlying problem. And you might say, well, how's that? You know, well, it says that she basically says it failed to address it because there was no clear cut diplomatic process for de-escalation, incentives for a ceasefire, and a condition of withdrawal of Russian military forces in Ukraine. So her reason for voting against it is that, you know, it took things, but it didn't offer anything. It didn't say, here's what, you know, to get back to our normal relationship, you need to do or something. It's just like, no, you can't have this anymore. And she didn't seem to support it. But, you know, the fact that this made it into the news made me wonder more about the other reasoning behind the other 16 individuals that voted against it. I mean, that's really not very many people that all jump on board. We can't even get them to support a lot of good bills that are good for America this way. You know, this thing is really driving up oil and gas prices, I think. But she sits on the House of Judiciary and Oversight Committees, said that our approach to the crisis in Ukraine must be rooted in ending human suffering, ensuring accountability, and creating pathways to peace and justice for all. So it starts to sound like, you know, the normal thing there. But yeah, nonetheless. I just wanted to get into the point that, you know, at least some people were voting in opposition to what the mainstream. She said that she does back the sanctions against Russia. She supports sanctions that target the murderous Putin regime, Russian oligarchs, and corporate fossil fuel executives profiting off human suffering. She said that she's also proud to have supported swift action by Congress to provide billions of dollars in humanitarian aid to help the millions of refugees that are fleeing the Ukraine. She thinks that's vital funding that will save lives. So there we go. I don't know what you think about it, Derek, but it is interesting to know that not everybody.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective that, like, yeah, sorry. I was going to say, yeah, I think it is interesting, like you said, that not everybody is following along the storyline. And that isn't the case that we're being told. And anyone who is just an individual who has been questioning, hey, maybe there's deeper reasons. Maybe it's just not Putin bad and decides to randomly invade or whatever, is being called, you know, apologists. Just like what a couple of years ago, Micah, remember, if you didn't just support the rush to invade Syria and to take out the murderous Assad, and then you must be some apologist for him, right? If you were questioning the alleged gas attacks they claimed were happening back then you must be, you know, a Syrian imperialist or whatever the case is. It's a similar situation. I wanted to hit a couple of points before we get to the one you mentioned, which I think does a good job of pointing out that the corporate media in the Western world has a very exclusive kind of specific focus, and they ignore conflicts like Yemen and others that have been going on for years because it doesn't really play into their hands. Before we get into that, though, I do want to hit two points that I think bring up some other angles of this whole Russian-Ukrainian thing that people need to be thinking deeper about. I'll just say that, in my opinion, that without spending the rest of the show talking about this, because it is an important issue, but we've got more to cover, that you can't simply just say Putin bad man. That's all the result of that. That's all that happened here, is he just decided one day invade. There's a lot of history that myself and others have talked about. I know we covered it when it was happening, probably back in 2014, when the supposed Ukrainian revolution and the Western nations, the United States and their allies, put in essentially a puppet government that was antagonistic towards Ukraine, and also, I mean, towards Russia. And also many people have been warning for years that this was going to happen because NATO continues to expand. I saw a good map the other day that said, here's NATO in 1970, here's today, and how they've continued to expand closer up to Russia's borders. And oh no, somebody is upset, and now, you know, we're dealing with conflict. That doesn't justify Putin's actions at this point, but I do think it's just important to point out that it's not as black and white as they want people to think. And with all that said, I do think that this issue, even if they're now talking about Ukraine and Russia instead of COVID, a lot of the same things you were dealing with are going to be here. We've been worried about inflation since before COVID, right, Micah? I mean, this has been a long perennial issue. But during COVID, we were told the lockdowns hurt the economy, the job market, et cetera. It was all being blamed on COVID. Now we have a new excuse, and that is that inflation and bread prices are going to be blamed on the situation developing in Ukraine and Russia. This is from just a couple of days ago before we were recording this, titled, "We Need Bread, Fears in Middle East as Ukraine War Hits Wheat Imports." This is being reported by The Guardian. Aid agencies, those who are watching, organizations and countries that need help, warn of a, quote, ripple effect as soaring wheat prices hit countries already facing inflation, food security, and conflict. Concerns are growing across the Middle East and North Africa that the war in Ukraine will send prices of staple foods soaring as wheat supplies are hit, potentially fueling unrest. Russia and Ukraine supply a quarter of the world's wheat exports, while Egypt is the world's biggest importer of wheat. In Tunisia, like many people queuing for breads in Tunisia's sprawling Medina or Old Town, and they go into the story of how a day laborer is basically saying, you know, he's doing worse than ever, that it's just even more difficult for him to make ends meet and get bread for his family. And it's saying that currently, since the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, that the wheat imports are at a 14-year high for wheat. And that this is starting to affect, of course, bread prices and so many other things. And so the article goes deeper into it. I don't want to read the whole thing, but it's just talking about how this is going to affect the world on a national level, and how if you have the breadbasket of the world, not able to produce everything because of conflict, and then you have things like sanctions on Russia for oil imports. And, you know, of course, Michael, with all the sense that the United States government makes, they're sanctioning Russia right now on oil imports now. And now the U.S. government is turning to Venezuela and saying, hey, let's do some new oil imports, after they had previously sanctioned Venezuela and we're buying oil from Russia. Because a lot of people don't realize the U.S. government.
That's how you get a real good deal on the oil, right? You almost topple the guy, and, you know, you threaten and call him a fake president, and then you go, you know, say, oh, we're not groveling, but we're in a bind. We could use some of that stuff you got. I just can't see getting, you know, the bargain basement price at that point.
Yeah, it's just crazy to see. I think people should really take that. And again, like you said, Michael, they say in Venezuela, we talked about this when it was happening. They were trying to say that Maduro was an unfit and not, you know, the real leader. And they started picking out Juan Guaido. He's going to be our replacement. Well, the people didn't buy it. They didn't succeed in that case. So then they tried to sanction him and it didn't work. So Maduro's still in power. So in the meantime, instead of buying Venezuelan oil, they're buying Russian oil. Now they're sanctioning Russia and we're buying Venezuelan oil again.
In the long run, if people pay for all the bad, like losing face, all the bad moves, not just in terms of the dollars that it takes to negotiate like horrible moves like they did, but also, you know, just in the loss of face, you know, in the, like, how are other nations going to make good deals for us with us when these guys can't deal for us? I mean, they don't know how to deal.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's continue. I got one more I wanted to cover before I pass it back to you, Micah, to get into that Mint Press news article. Guys, you're listening to Freethinker Radio. We do this every week. Uncensored news, underground music. If you want to have your music played on air on the Houston radio, access to hundreds of thousands of listeners, the fourth biggest city in the United States, reach out to us at Freethinker Radio. We're still on Facebook. You can email us. You can find us. We're on the web. We're also on Spotify. And we'll play your songs. Get them to us. Micah, you have an email, right, for that?
Yeah, for sure. You can just email Micah@visionarynoise.com.
Micah@visionarynoise.com. Cool. All right. Well, let's continue. This one, I just wanted to share a post. This was shared around Telegram, and I shared it earlier today. It's a nice little collection of articles, because another one of the elements that just a couple of weeks ago was in the realm of conspiracy theory, and now it's being admitted by the United States. And this was that people were reporting, well, and I don't really agree with the framing, because there's people out there who think Putin's a good guy. And so they're like, Putin's going against the New World Order or the Western capitalist imperialists. And he's trying to stop them because they had bioweapons labs in Ukraine and he's coming to save the day. And I don't know if I agree with that framing, but there is truth to this previously called a conspiracy, this idea that there are bioweapons labs in Ukraine that were being funded by the United States. So this little report says, ever since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, rumors abound of the possibility of the existence of bio labs in the country that may be part of a target of Russian operations. Though this has been a target of sophistry from the state and met with outright denials, the facts contradict the government's refutation of their existence. Here's a collection of six must-see reports for you to be accurate on the subject. And they have one here from Glenn Greenwald. Victoria Nuland, Ukraine has biological research facilities and we're worried Russia may seize them. So now they're acknowledging, the U.S. government's acknowledging that they're there, and they're, you know, saying, uh-oh, Russia might get them, which worries me about potential claims of bioweapons again, like we saw in Syria. Story number two says U.S. admits to funding biological weapons in Ukraine. Dan Cohen interviews Dilyana Gayatsanziva, a Bulgarian investigative journalist with several years' experience reporting on bioresearch facilities in Eastern Europe. Documents expose U.S. biological experiments on Allied soldiers on Ukraine and Georgia. This is a January 2022 article from the same journalist providing leaked documents demonstrating U.S. funding of deadly biological experiments in Ukraine. Next story, Pentagon Bioweapons, a 2018 in-depth investigative report details the biological research facilities throughout Eastern Europe, including Georgia, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Uzbekistan, Ukraine, and more, and a general brief history of U.S.-funded biological weapons experiments. And then from the U.S. government website itself, publicly available State Department documents from 2005 acknowledge the presence of weaponizable biological material in Ukrainian facilities. And in the final story from this report, as government demands our trust, here are multiple examples of the state endangering public health. And that just kind of goes a little, gives you a little refresher, a reminder in case you forgot that the government has been capable of those kinds of things. So that's just like a whole nother, you know, curveball on the whole discussion, Mike. I don't know if you've heard any of that about the whole weapons, potential weapons lab in Ukraine, but that's what I got. I don't know if you have any thoughts before we jump into yours.
Where do we go from there? I mean, we know that Biden made six trips to Kiev. Where do we go from there, that there's all this, you know, where do we go from there? I think it's important. It needs to be investigated. It needs to be dug up. It sounds like, you know, there's a long train of articles that you have there. But yet, like, where do we go from there? Who's it linked to? How's it tied into the story? How's it tied into any of the misdirection, et cetera? I don't doubt exactly that it's a large potentiality. I just don't know what it means in the play, other than we already know they're capable and do this wherever they can anyway, it seems. So
yeah, I think I'll just say one thing. I think one fear, and I mean, maybe it's a legitimate fear. Well, let's say the mainstream version of the fear, like Victoria Nuland said, well, yes, there are facilities and we're worried Putin's going to get them and release, because apparently there's smallpox and all kinds of stuff in some of these labs. So the U.S. is playing the role of, we're afraid Putin's going to get to them. And then Putin and some of his officials have been claiming, we're coming to shut those labs down. Like, we're going to seize them and take control to make sure the U.S. government doesn't do something crazy. There are people now, the people again, on the who are always affected by this, who are concerned, whatever's really going on, it's not going to be good for us. And something could be released and it could be blamed on Putin, or it could be released and blamed on the U.S. And who's going to suffer in the end? The people, right? And again, who knows? Maybe those are things that are out of our hands, but at least just wanted to acknowledge that that's another piece of the equation tonight here. But let's go ahead and jump into your Mint Press news article here.
No doubt. I appreciate you clarifying that. And that's what I was asking, you know, what's its value and how's it being played? So that definitely helped clarify that. And I think that's kind of some of the important aspects of news analysis. So I'm thankful that we have the opportunity to spend some time with you every week and do this. Yeah, it turns out, you know, what's going on? You know, we've asked about this almost any time something just dominates the media. And it kind of explains this in the Mint Press article here. It says, more or less, we're living in dangerous times all around the world. Intense military actions are taking place. Last week alone, Russia launched a huge military invasion of Ukraine. Saudi Arabia carried out dozens of strikes on Yemen. You know, we've been talking about that for some time now. Israel launched a wave of deadly missile attacks against Syria, and the U.S. restarted its bombing campaign in Somalia. Did you know that last one? These four deadly incidents happened concurrently at the same time. Yet, if you were to judge by media coverage, it is highly unlikely that many will even be aware of the last three. I mean, I think more people are aware of the drone bombing in Yemen, but did you know about Israel launching missiles into Syria? About the U.S. bombing in Somalia? Well, it turns out that in a total, in the week between Monday, February 21st and Sunday, February 27th, Fox News, The New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, and MSNBC, all of them, those named, ran almost 1,300 distinct stories on the Ukraine invasion. Two stories on the Syria attack, one on Somalia, and none at all on the Saudi-led war in Yemen. So, you know, how complete is your news? The data for the study was collected using Factiva News database, which was then cross-referenced with searches, etc. So, yeah, it's quite startling with, you know, just so many unique stories on Ukraine. You got to ask yourself, what's the motivation? You know, what is the motivation? Collectively, these five outlets published 1,298 stories about Ukraine, meaning each one printed at around one per hour on average over the week studied. Fox News ran the most, 308, roughly one every 30 minutes. However, there was little significant numerical differences between the outlets, whose front pages and editorial sections were all dominated by headlines about Ukraine. In contrast, only the New York Times mentioned the Somali strike at all, while the Washington Post was the only outlet to cover the attacks on Syria. Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC did not cover any of the other nation-on-nation attacks at all. What do you think that says, Derek?
I think this is a bias that we've seen happen for a number of years that, like I was kind of hinting at earlier, if it's not convenient to the current goals of the Western Empire or the, you know, the Five Eyes nations or however you want to label them, then it's not going to be discussed, right? I mean, we know, I saw, just to kind of add to this, I saw a Free Thought Project report based on a Blaze Freedom of Information Act request showing that all the corporate media outlets, left, right, conservative, liberal, et cetera, whatever you want to label them, received money from the federal government to run pro-vaccine campaigns and ads, which is maybe not a big surprise to many people, but it's just another example of how the corporate media serves the agenda of the predator class, the one of the wannabe ruling class. And in this case, if that means keep us afraid of Putin and focus on Russia and Ukraine, don't think about Yemen, don't think about Syria, don't think about these other conflicts because they're not convenient to the narrative, then that's what they're going to do. And that pretty much is what I think we're seeing here. And so I'm glad Mint Press is actually doing the work to kind of put this into real numbers so people can see that, because those numbers are pretty crazy. The 13,000 or 1,300 separate stories, yeah, on Ukraine between in a week.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
And the story goes on.
It does, again, it shows just the bias.
Yeah, and the story goes on and talks about each of the distinct nation-on-nation conflicts that weren't mentioned elsewhere. But I, you know, that's another story, maybe another time. I know we only have so much time left and a lot to get into. My main thrust in getting into this is what else is going on. And, you know, the brutality we can cover in Yemen, we can cover the brutality everywhere. But I mean, if you didn't know these are going on, maybe you can get into them a bit more. But yeah, we'd spend the rest of the episode if we went through the entirety.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't have that time, but, you know, maybe in a future episode, we will have to dedicate a whole episode to all the wars and conflicts that you're not being told about, you know, that the United States doesn't want to talk about, because these aren't the ones they're going to tell you to change your Facebook profile over, to put a frame on your thing, or to wave this flag.
Feel like you belong.
Yeah, exactly. These are the ones they don't want you to think about. We're down to the last few minutes here, but I am going to go ahead and play this clip, Micah. Let's see if I can find it. This is just from Freethinker Radio on December 6th. 2021. So yeah, almost 4 months ago, 3 months ago, CIA sex crimes exposed is what we named this episode. That was another episode where we were talking about similar stories like you started with earlier this morning, this episode, Micah. And in this episode, I talked about the world agrees to negotiate a global pandemic treaty to fight the next outbreak. And this was covered by Washington Post as well as maybe one or two other outlet, but I just want to play the clip. This is me, you, and Johnny discussing this 4 months ago. So just check this out, guys. let's make sure it's going to play. It's stalling a little bit.
About pandemic.
Oh, we might not have a good enough connection to get it playing, but I think that's maybe even just fine there. I'll share the link if anybody wants to catch up. You can just go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com, go check out our December 6th episode. And yeah, this story is now popping up again. People are talking about it again in the independent media, talking about this pandemic treaty. I still don't think, as I said in this video, we know the full implications of it, because you're getting all the big countries coming together under the acting of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, creating a new pandemic treaty to come together for best practices to make sure this never happens again. And for those of us who have questions and concerns and think people should be held accountable for the last 2 years, I think that's a little bit, you know, unnerving to think that now they're signing a whole new treaty. And what I'll say, Michael, what you said in that clip was it's one more step towards global governance, right? It might not be global government per se yet, but it's still one more step in that direction. And I agree with that sentiment there. So you heard it on Freethinker Radio 4 months ago. Maybe you did, if you were listening. And if not, it's just a reminder why you should tune in.
You taking us into a old episode makes me want to remind people that the episodes are out on Spotify as well. It's not a platform we typically promote a lot here, but we know we could be able to reach a lot of people there with the ideas. So we do appreciate all the comments. I'm glad you were able to get into some earlier on the episode. It seemed like people got motivated to speak about a couple of the issues, and that's always rewarding.
Absolutely. And while we're down to the last few minutes, we'll just go ahead and cover one more story related to some of the other things happening, right? Like you said, there are big things happening besides Ukraine. And some of those, I think, is the overall push towards technocracy, this push towards central bank digital currencies. The one COVID story I did want to mention, I don't even have to show you guys, I'll just read the headline. Navy destroyer can't deploy because the captain won't get COVID vaccine, the Navy says. And a judge has already ruled that the Navy cannot remove this captain who's been unnamed, somebody in a pretty high level position who's refusing the COVID shot. And in fact, the captain of the ship, and because he's not vaccinated, they can't deploy. So the ship's just kind of stuck there. The judge says, you can't do anything to him. You can't punish him. And they're like, well, we're not going to deploy until he's vaccinated. And it's kind of at a standoff. So just to kind of let you know, those COVID measures are still in place in many places, including in the U.S. military. People's lives are still being affected by that, even if you're not hearing about it.
And we did discuss a couple of the judgments that came out of some of the mandates that occurred, how people, you know, there was one that was even, you know, questioning the constitutionality of this. And you got to ask yourself, from a person in the military perspective that has to swear, you know, an oath to the Constitution against all enemies and foreign and domestic, is it more important for him to get on top of that battleship and go over to, I don't know, Poland or somewhere, you know, and to go over somewhere, you know, far? Or is it important for him to stand up and say, I'm not getting that vaccine? Which one is a bigger step for freedom? I don't know. Each person has to decide that in their own, you know, view of the world. But I do think that, you know, it's quite possible that the choice not to be vaccinated could be a choice for freedom.
Oh, my gosh. How dare you? We're going to get canceled. All right. Well, let's end with this Biden story. This week, Joe Biden announces an executive order and one step closer towards the launch of central bank digital currency, something we've been talking about on this show for quite a while. And even before it had that name, the name is relatively new the last couple of years. People such as us, since 2011 at least, and others before us, have been warning about the push towards a digital currency and how that could spell disaster in terms of anonymity, privacy for those who prefer things like cash or just don't want to have a currency that's going to be tracked and traced through the government and logged on a blockchain. Well, in this case, the Biden administration says they're going to, I think it's just kind of like one more step towards it. It wasn't really, even in some corners, I know in crypto corners, people are like, okay, this is sort of a lackluster announcement. They just announced, we're going to do some more studies. But yeah, walk us through this, Michael. What is being reported about it?
No doubt. And I do appreciate the intro. I think it sums up a lot of it in the intro that you just gave. You know, the main thing is a lot of federal agencies will now produce reports on, you know, their view of digital currency, their research on digital currency, And, you know, meanwhile, we live in a world where China has already introduced its own CBDC, and more than 140 million people have digital wallets. You know, the Bahamas sand dollar is considered among the world's most successful digital currencies as well, is what they say. But I thought another thing was interesting is that they did mention that the Bahamas sand dollar was really useful for the unbanked. But, you know, we have digital currencies already. And I think in one way, it's just another attempt of them to, you know, get out, get ahead of something and, you know, be able to, you know, exploit it. Another thing to think about is we didn't get off the gold standard until we couldn't pay the debts. You know, maybe the same situation is occurring. You know, we can't get off this paper until we have another system that then will be just kind of like a reset in a way that will just be a, you know, a bandaging over, a papering over of the problem that was before, and it all goes away because now it's just digital dust. I don't know. As you said, it could just be another steps there towards something. But Bill Gates did say that there would always be banking, but there would not always be banks. One of the aspects that I've also thought about is, you know, read about as well, is how the Fed could basically do monetary policy all the way down to an individual level. It opens up new possibilities for how the government exercises policy, something that Michael Bordo, professor of economics at Rutgers University, said. Digital currency would make the kind of stimulus payments of the coronavirus pandemic nearly instantaneous and far more efficient, he said.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Got to bring in the COVID angle too, right?
Possibly even reaching people that have been shut out of banking services. So, you know, they're pushing to show that this is going to be more equitable. It's going to reach more. Quote, in about the Bahamian one, they found that there's really work. They came up with ways to make it real simple because there's a lot of very low income people who don't have bank accounts. And, you know,
this is the way they're going to sell it, man. I mean, this is, again, I'm glad you mentioned, and they even used the word the unbanked, right? This is the sleight of hand that they've been using in all different areas. We're coming in here to help the poor, those poor people in Mexico and India and third world nations who don't have smartphones and aren't in the banking system. We need to make sure that they get a digital ID and have a digital wallet so that they can, you know, use this and we'll be able to track and trace everything they do. And it's definitely not like it's here yet, but this is definitely it's clear. This is in the cards, right? Even Mexico has announced they're going to have a CBDC by 2000, or at least they're aiming for it by 2024.
And one of the things that they mention, Bordo mentions, that's a real game changer, he says, is that it will allow negative interest rates. And if the cash is electronic, government can just erase 2% of your money every year. That's separate, if you think about it, from the extra little digital blips they'll put out every year to, you know, inflate it as well. So you'll have negative interest rates and possible inflation at the same time. You know, so you'll be trying to outpace your digital dust dissolving on a perpetual basis. I think this is going to become a necessity, they say, just because of demographic changes in the world.
How is he even, honestly, we got to get out of here now, but I mean, how is he, this guy, even honestly saying, like, the government can erase 2% of your money every year, and like, this is a good thing? I don't know, guys, we're about out of time. Mike, any last closing thoughts?
It's probably not a good thing for them to take 2% of your money. Stay free, y'all.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week. We're going to end with, what do we got? Velveteen Echo. This has been Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. See you next week.
No, they're still here. What's up? I was getting ready to get out of here. I just said that little thing.